Welcome to Hubbub, the People's Podcast, where we engage our citizens and investors with the activities of the Planning and Code Administration and encourage everyone to contribute to Hagerstown's growth.
Welcome to episode 33 of the Hubbub Podcast. We are in March and rolling right along in 2022 into our next episode. I'm Donnie Harcum. I'm here with my co-host, Mr. Paul Falk. How you doing today?
Oh, doing pretty good here. We're kind of having this weird weather here with March, as we always seem to have in this area.
Yeah, I know. We always talk about the weather to kind of set the tone for where we're at in the year, and it has been really weird lately. You know, we had some 70-degree days and then had a little bit of snow and sleet yesterday. So just can't make this stuff up. And something else we're not going to make up is this topic today. And it's a... It's a big one, but it's a tiny one at the same time. So something that has gotten very large in our country and abroad is the tiny home industry. And, you know, this movement has become so large that there have been several TV reality shows made about them. And just in the last several years, there's about 10 of them that have been made. And, you know, it's really caught on as a movement if there's a TV show made about it. So when did this tiny home craze start? Some arguments can be made that when the country was being founded, that it was traditional to have a small home. However, the current movement is considered to have started in the 1970s. And when the Great Recession happened in, from 2007 to 2009, the small house movement attracted even more attention. And, you know, these are, it's a more affordable and ecologically friendly house to have something smaller. And also Oprah, you know, the pool that she has and the audience that she has, she actually featured tips to her viewers on how to maximize space in a smaller living quarters and gave a tour of a 96 square foot tiny home exposing how this type of living is done. Then in 2016, this is when things really got serious. This is when the International Code Council announced that tiny home specific indexes would be added as part of the 2018 International Residential Code. And this was a significant step forward for the tiny home industry to have recognition to obtain certificates of occupancy for these tiny homes.
That's pretty neat. And also, as anything Oprah does, as soon as Oprah does it, it becomes a craze, it seems.
Yes.
Like. So that definitely probably set the stage for a lot of this that's going on that we're
Absolutely.
Seeing in this area. So one of the things that you always have to wonder is, what is a tiny home? What classifies a tiny home? A tiny home is generally classified as something that is 400 square feet or less. So that is actually pretty tiny when you think about it. Now, everything always varies depending on what jurisdiction that you actually live in. So as we recommend frequently on these podcasts, that you should always check with your local jurisdiction to see whether or not 400 square foot is classified as a tiny home, or is it something larger or smaller that you have to be classified as an actual tiny home. Now, so you kind of get a comparison of where things are at. You know, we could say 400 square feet and people might think, I know what 400 square feet looks like, but you might not actually realize what it looks like. The average home size in 1973 in America was approximately 1,500 square feet. So that's, you can see that's almost, you know, three times the size of what a tiny home is, but that was in 1973. Today's standards, the average home size is 2,500 square feet. So obviously a lot bigger than what it was 50 years ago, almost double than right. what it was 50 years ago. So homes are getting larger. Now, the actual average home size is actually decreasing. Over the last 5 years, it actually has decreased in size. And it's not so much because of the tiny homes. It's actually because the McMansions that used to be built in this country are not being built really anymore. These McMansions, if you remember, they were really large homes on tiny parcels that were being built in communities trying to maximize their square footage. This is not a common practice anymore. And with the decrease in McMansions, that's actually decreased the average home size in America. Now, let's get back a little bit to tiny homes. So, you know, tiny homes, you know, we talked about them in general of what a tiny home is in square footage, but does it actually have to have anything else with it? And a tiny home, depending on what community you're in, would be whether or not it was on a foundation or if it's on a trailer. Now, the one thing you should be aware of, that if a tiny home is on a trailer, that might not be considered a tiny home because things on wheels might not be considered a permanent residence depending on what community you live in. So it's one of those things you want to always make sure you check with your local community and your local permits and planning office to make sure that if I had a tiny home on a vehicle, could I actually live in it.
Yeah, that's a really good point, something to be aware of. And as Paul mentioned, make sure you're checking with that your local jurisdiction because things do change everywhere. And, you know, although that we're discussing tiny homes going smaller, they're actually growing in size. The average tiny home in 1998 was 90 square feet. This is approximately 9 foot by 10 foot, and that's on a trailer. By 2010, the average size grew to 160 square feet, which was 20 feet by 8 feet. And then a couple years ago, the average size of a tiny house was about 252 square feet. And that's approximately 28 feet by 9 feet. And this is almost triple the size from 20 years ago. Some purchasers are now asking for homes to be as long as 30 to 40 feet. And the maximum size for a tiny house on wheels is 40 feet long, 13.5 feet tall, and 8.5 feet wide. The homes are tiny, but they are creeping up in size.
Yeah, that is really interesting. We just talked about how the average home size is increasing from the 70s to now. And then we just in 20 years, we're seeing that the home size is increasing for tiny homes.
Right.
So people always want a little bit more space. Even though you might be downsizing to a tiny home, you still want more space than what you had decades ago.
Right.
That's kind of interesting. And then I couldn't imagine a tiny home coming down the road with 40 foot long, 13.5 feet tall coming down the interstate. I would definitely be intimidated seeing that coming down the road.
Yes, absolutely.
So, you know, who is moving into these types of homes? You know, who's choosing to live inside of a tiny home? I mean, I don't know about you, Donnie, if you feel like you could fit your family inside of a tiny home.
I feel like we could. My wife would beg to differ on that one. It would be tough. I can't imagine you in your situation.
with all of my kids, I don't think we could fit inside of a tiny home. We would definitely be crowding each other. So, you know, why are people choosing these though? It's generally because of the expense. A tiny home is so much cheaper to actually have than a traditional home. And then one of the reasons that tiny homes are growing a lot in communities is because of that expense, and it's actually being used to combat some of the homelessness that's going on. We're going to talk about that in a little bit, but it's this expense of the tiny homes is what's really driving a lot of this industry. And the one reason also is that homeowners can actually have more control over what's going into it. They feel like they can pick and choose their things that are more appealing to them and be able to spend a little bit more money maybe on those amenities, but not as much as what a traditional home would actually cost. And talking about traditional home cost, last year, a newly constructed home, the average price in America was $383,900. That is a significant of investment into a new single family home. If you're looking to buy just an existing home that was already built, just buying one that previously was owned by someone else and was previously constructed years before, was listed at $275,000. Now, when we say the tiny homes are a little bit less expensive to build, that is a custom built two suite tiny home. Average cost last year was $59,884. So if you're comparing that to the new traditional home, that is a lot less than what it used to be, or what a new home is compared to a tiny home. So definitely a big savings on that. Now you're thinking, all right, well, I'm a DIYer. I could go in, I could take that existing home, I could renovate it, and I can make it so much nicer. Maybe you could do a DIY yourself of building a tiny home. They estimate the average cost for a DIYer to build their own tiny home at $23,000, which is just 10% of the cost of an existing home average listed sales price. Now, it is crazy. You're crazy on some of those numbers. Now, some tiny homes, though, might be costing this a little bit. Some are being very expensive, up into the hundreds of thousands of dollars ranges, because they're going with all sorts of amenities and one thing's very nice on the inside and are actually costing a lot more. So it kind of depends on what level of a home that you might want to have as your tiny home living. The one thing that I found while we were researching this was that a home in Boston, it was built in 1970. It was a 250 square foot home built in 1970, but classified as a tiny home, just recently sold this year for $315,000. So it was in a wealthy high-class area in Boston, but it sold for $315,000. We don't know the resale of tiny homes, so we can't say anyone's always going to make that type of profit if they build a small home. Certainly this place in Boston from 50 years ago was able to sell this. Now, one of the things too is that tiny homes also have savings on a lot of the energy savings that they have. It's a smaller house, so of course you're going to save a little bit more money. They actually estimate that when a tiny home is using about 7% of the energy that a traditional house has. So you might be able to sell your wife on that one then. Maybe. If you can save a little bit on energy.
Yeah.
But that you can save so much money on a energy for a tiny home by just being in such more of a confined space. You know, there are things that people do, such as, you know, adding solar panels to harness some of the solar energy that they may be able to use for the tiny home. Also, kind of taking appliances, there are washers and dryers in one. So that's kind of a more unique appliance that you see. We don't see too much here in America, but a lot in Europe, you do see those types of appliances. But these are being done in tiny homes just to save on space and could utilize that same appliance for multiple purposes. Also, with a tiny home, you know, you might be saying, okay, well, I might be able to sleep in that type of area, but I don't know if I get my family, like, you know, I have four kids, you know, I might be able to live in a tiny home and we all might be able to sleep together in that area, but will we actually be able to dine in that area?
Right.
So one of the things with tiny homes is that you utilize some of the outdoor space as actually some of your living or dining space. So some of these tiny home enthusiasts are actually people that like the outdoors. They want to be outside, they enjoy eating outside, or they enjoy living majority of their life outside the four walls inside their home. But the one thing though, if you have bad weather, you're going to be eating inside. You're going to be eating inside. And who's basically attracted to these tiny homes? It's actually baby boomers and millennials. The baby boomers are actually looking at it for more as a retirement purpose of downsizing. Don't want as much home to take care of. You know, if you had your kids, they grew up, they moved out of the home. Now you have all of this house and you're only living in a few rooms where before you might have been utilizing the whole space. So that's something that they're looking to downsize to have something a little bit easier for them to maintain and live in. And then actually millennials are looking at this because they can actually get their foot in the door for home ownership. It's a cheaper threshold to get across, but they can actually get in the door, start owning some property, and start building some equity into the home that they might have. So millennials and baby boomers are the types of people that are generally looking at tiny homes right now.
And that is interesting because you brought up, you're not sure how much of a return you might get on this investment because we don't know the resale value on a lot of these. And that's an argument against a lot of tiny homes is, you know, the resale value may not be as high, but when you're talking $25,000 to $60,000 to get into one of these, that's a huge step up for, like you said, millennials trying to get into their first home. And I'm not trying to wait till retirement to get one of these. If I could just stop my wife from going on her shopping sprees, you know, get a smaller house, less places to put stuff, you know? So, yeah, I like those talking points. Thank you. This is a lot more beneficial than I thought. All right. So, you know how we mentioned the regulations for these tiny homes do differ. There's actually some communities that are very welcoming to the tiny homes. Some of the top states with tiny homes are in California, Florida, and Colorado. 15.5% of the tiny homes in America actually in California.
It's got to make sense. California is so expensive to live in. Why not have a tiny home
exactly
to live in?
Yep, you're 100% correct. Oregon has towns that specifically welcome these tiny homes. In 1997, Portland, Oregon, amended its housing regulations to allow homeowners to build accessible dwelling units by right. And what this means is they can build a tiny home on their property as long as it meets guidelines without special permits. And this also allowed property owners to build a second home on their property as a tiny home. These are mostly being occupied by aging relatives, children returning home, or just as a guest house. I kind of like that idea. In Spur, Texas, they proclaimed themselves as the country's first tiny house-friendly town in 2014. The city offered hundreds of vacant lots alongside flexible zoning codes for these tiny home dwellers. Tiny homes, they're actually getting fancier too. Professional tiny home builders, they're seeing an increase in customer and customers requesting higher end finishes and standard size appliances in tiny homes, which I guess that would kind of build up the sizes mm-hmm. of these homes as well. And some are actually requesting a king size bed. I can't imagine some of these sizes having a king size bed in there, but that's, you end up getting a bigger house, I guess. And the reason for these property owners, you know, they're giving up living space, but they're going to have higher end amenities inside. So I get that. And many states and cities have stated, have started to remove size restrictions from their zoning laws to allow the construction of tiny homes. The friendliest states have created special laws or setting aside land specifically for tiny homes in Texas, Colorado, Nevada, Nebraska, and South Dakota.
That's really interesting. You mentioned a lot of different places here in America, but, you know, our podcast here, we're based in Hagerstown. What do we have here in Hagerstown? You know, do we allow a tiny home here in Hagerstown? So, you know, the city of Hagerstown did adopt, as you mentioned, the International Residential Code 2018 has an appendix in it, Appendix Q, that's specifically for tiny homes. And we did actually adopt that code. We did adopt that code in 2019 along with the appendix for tiny homes. However, we did have one amendment to that code, and that was the definition of what is a tiny home. And the definition that we said is that a tiny home is a structure that is more than 500 square feet. So, and want to make sure you see that more than. Not so much less than, it is more than 500 square feet. So that means if you wanted to build a house in Hagerstown, you have to have at least 500 square feet or more to actually have what's considered a home in Hagerstown. Okay. So it's not something that's so tiny. I mean, it is a little bit bigger than a traditional tiny home, but we still have to say it's bigger than 500 square feet. And then, you know, the tiny home still must actually, even though we classify a tiny home as 500 square feet or more, the tiny home still has to meet all of our land management code requirements for a new home. It doesn't have any waivers for it. It still has to actually meet the requirements for a tiny home. And that can include the size of the lot or the width of the lot, depending on, you know, what zoning district you're actually in. And then also, you know, let's say you want to do that secondary home, like you had mentioned. I like that idea. You thought that was pretty nice. I could have that secondary home. Might be thinking about, you know, your kid later, maybe of a place.
Thinking about for myself as a little, little outhouse area. You know.
So for something, or for Donnie's sanctuary out there, that you know, you could have a second home maybe on a property. Well, here in Hagerstown, you still have to meet the requirements for a second dwelling unit, even if it is considered a tiny home of 500 square feet or more. So the thing meaning is that you might still require 10,000 square feet of land area, or maybe 50-foot width of a lot, to actually have that second home on your lot. Because in Hagerstown, we don't have any exemptions for what's classified as a tiny home. So that's something that you always want to make sure that you're considering. You know, people buy properties a lot of times, and then they could say, oh, well, I want to do this and this and this to the property. But local zoning or permit laws might not actually allow that. So it's always good to reach out to your local jurisdiction to see what is going to be allowed. Can I actually put that second home on the property that I'm thinking for either my aging parent or that child that's coming home from college that I just want to give them their own little place to live? Mm-hmm. Is that really going to be something that they're going to be able to have on the property? So check with your local jurisdiction.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, you brought up how this law came into the International Residential Code in 2018. You know, what is in this? You know, we're not going to go over all of it today, but we do want to give you some highlights of this appendix. So, habitable spaces and hallways in tiny homes are not to have a ceiling height less than 6'8", and bathrooms, toilet rooms, and kitchens are not to be less than 6'4". Now, in comparison, for reference, a single-family non-tiny home is to have 7-foot ceiling heights and 6'8" in bathrooms. So there's a little bit of comparison of what's standard in a single family non-tiny home and in a tiny home. The non-habitable area in a loft area, when portions of the loft have a sloped ceiling, they measure less than 3 feet from the finished floor to the finished ceiling, are considered non-habitable. The code is 5 feet in traditional homes. Risers for stairs accessing a loft are to be not less than 7 inches and not more than 12 inches in height. And there is a calculation of the tread depth. And a typical single family home, they do not have risers greater than 7 3/4 inches. Emergency escapes and rescue openings are required in a tiny home just as they are in a single family home. The only exception is if a loft area is being utilized as a sleeping area, the emergency escape window is to be not more than 44 inches above the loft floor and complying with the window minimum opening requirements. And if you recall, we discussed the importance of emergency escapes back in October in episode 28. So if you wanted to brush up on some of that, be sure to listen to that episode because that is a very important one when dealing with really any home.
It's interesting on how, you know, the International Code Council did adopt or develop a code, I should say. We adopted it. They developed the code that addresses things with tiny homes. But there's things when you compared them just in that same code book there that they have the appendix. It's basically saying for these homes, we'll allow a little bit of waiver on some of these things of what might be a standard requirement in a traditional home.
Right. A little bit of give and take there.
Mm-hmm. Yep. That's very interesting. But you are right on with the emergency escapes. That although they're allowing a tiny home to exist in their code, you still need to get safely out of the home right. through an emergency or a rescue situation. Now, one thing we keep on talking about America, you know, with these tiny homes, we're not the only country that is actually in the tiny home craze. This is actually a worldwide type of thing that is not just being solely here in America, that it's all around the world. Australia actually has the world's first master-planned, ecological, off-grid tiny home subdivision. Now, surprisingly, Australia would have something off-grid. I don't know. When you think of Australia, I always think of all off-grid type of
right.
living.
Yeah.
But they're one of the first ones to have that. Canada actually has a lot of bylaws out there in the country about permitting and regulating tiny homes. It all depends on what community you live in. So if you happen to be one of our Canada listeners, you want to make sure you check with them because we saw things from Edmonton. We saw stuff from Quebec and Montreal. They all have different regulations, so they're not consistent across the board. So you certainly want to make sure you're checking with those local jurisdictions. Germany actually created a planned density for an area where you could have up to 50 dwelling units per acre. Now, sometimes people don't understand what an acre is. You know, it's just over 43,000 square feet. As I mentioned before, here in Hagerstown, you have to have 10,000 square feet to have two dwelling units on it. So if you had an acre of land and you want to kind of subdivide that out with that same kind of math, that means you only have eight structures on that land. They're saying they could have up to 50 on that land in that acre. So that's a lot of homes in an area. And then Spain architects, Flores and Prats, they actually presented a 300 square foot tiny house tagged as House in a Suitcase. I thought that was kind of a unique name, House in a Suitcase, but something that they've actually designed of how you can actually build a tiny home with their floor plan. And then in Brazil, the tiny house, Brazil is the first tiny home manufacturing in the country. So they have that down there. And there were other places that we saw, such as in France, New Zealand, Sweden, and the United Kingdom, that there were all sorts of different areas that had these types of homes. I mean, it was in Europe and South America that we're seeing these different ones. Maybe we can get the city to maybe budget some of funds for us to travel to these places so we could understand how these tiny homes are being constructed or lived in.
Might be a hard sell, but we could try.
I mean, we could try. I mean, teleworking got really popular here during the COVID times. Maybe we could figure out how to telework from those locations.
Research.
Yeah, it's just research. I think maybe we can get that expense to go for that one. Now, you know, this movement has been mostly spurred by, you know, professionals building these homes, but also amateurs have gotten into the industry as well, which has started to create some safety concerns in the tiny home industry, as it is with anything. I mean, to build a new house now, I mean, in the state of Maryland alone, you have to be a licensed home builder. You have to be MHIC person. You can't just actually just go out and build a home. You have to actually have a licensed professional to oversee this build. So although the tiny home industry hasn't gotten into making sure all the professionals are licensed, they actually have several associations have been created just for safety concerns and coming up with some regulations with them. So there have been some nonprofit organizations such as American Tiny House Association and the Tiny Home Industry Association. These are ones that are doing ethical business practices and also offer guidance on construction of how to build these tiny homes. So although they haven't come up with something standardized across the country here in America, they have actually started to create some associations to help maybe formulate something as a standard practice in the tiny home industry.
That's great they're doing that because like you said, you know, people are coming across these, you know, the do-it-yourselfers out there. You know, I've come across tons of YouTube videos. They're really amazing, you know, these people that have never built a house before, you know, and what the finished product looks like. it looks great, but how safe is it, mm-hmm. you know? And it's not taking anything away from them, but it's good to have, you know, these associations in place for these people to turn to. So I like that. So, you know, I know you're probably getting super excited now about tiny homes and maybe you want to run out there and, you know, build one yourself. But as you mentioned earlier, you might have all the ideas in the world, but you also have to find a place to, you know, that allows it and for you to live in one. So zoning regulations, they typically specify minimum square footage for new construction on a foundation. Lower courts decisions in the United States have struck down zoning laws related to the size of a newly constructed home. The League of South Jersey versus the Township of Berlin found that a zoning law related to the size of a home did not protect citizens. Tiny homes on wheels and parking one on your own land could be prohibited because it may be considered camping in that specific zoning code. In addition to parking on your own land, RV parks do not always allow tiny homes unless they meet certain RV criteria. Tiny home communities are being created in some areas, but they're not allowed these types of tiny home structures to meet local codes, but also to create housing for the homeless. So as Paul mentioned earlier, this is a solution some jurisdictions are looking into. The Great Recession, you know, really did help the tiny home movement. Several cities were struggling with homelessness after the Great Recession, and they had semi-permanent tent cities. These tiny homes were constructed as shelters for the homeless in these tent cities, such as Eugene, Oregon, Olympia, Washington, Ithaca, New York. You know, that's just a few of the cities that came up with these solutions. And arguments can be made that housing the homeless is a cost-saving measure for municipalities. There's been plenty of studies done showing, there's one in particular in Charlotte, southeastern Colorado, and central Florida that supported the claim. The studies have looked into policing the homeless versus housing the homeless, and policing the homeless have calculated almost three times the cost of housing those that are in need. So it's an interesting concept there. And a town in Massachusetts, they created a village of 21 tiny homes to house the chronically homeless population and is planned to open in 2023. Again, zoning in your area must permit this type of use. So this is not the immediate solution in all areas. Your local elected body may need to adopt codes to permit this specific type of use. And a concern that is raised with these types of tiny home communities for the homeless is the areas becoming shanty towns or blighted neighborhoods that reduce property values from surrounding neighborhoods. You know, that's a big concern with existing citizens. So. It's mm-hmm. something that it's interesting. It's interesting reading these, and I'll be curious where the future heads for some of these tiny homes.
Yeah, that is interesting, especially with some of the numbers that you were throwing out there. That the studies have shown that it's three times less expensive for jurisdictions if they just house the homeless than it is trying to go out and police the areas. I mean, we deal with homeless camps from our position here at the city. That we're dealing with concerns from citizens and properties being trashed with homeless camps, where if there's something maybe where the homes are actually being constructed and they're being maintained, sometimes people when they live in a home tend to take a little bit more care of something than they do if they're just living on some land.
Right.
So maybe it'd be something that it might not always create those shanty towns that they're talking about, but we just don't know from experience here.
Exactly.
We have no way to answer that one. One of the things, though, too, that with tiny home living is that people say, when I'm going to go to a tiny home, you might be thinking in your head, I can't really live off the grid, because mm-hmm. Tiny home living sometimes been associated with living off the grid. But we're not talking about on or off the grid, but right now we'll talk about just off the grid items, because the tiny home industry can be either way. It can be on or off, but we'll talk about some of the things that are off grid type items. So what do you mean by off grid? So that basically means that I am not taking any energy right now from any public powered or public water or sewer type purposes. I'm just living basically inside of my structure and nothing else. I'm harnessing the energy from the sun, maybe from some solar panels that you might be just trying to just not use the actual power gridded system itself. Now, you might be thinking, all right, well, if I'm harnessing that power, what if it's cloudy? You know, and that's always one of those biggest questions about solar power. What if it's cloudy? What if I don't see the sun for a few days? What if I'm living underneath trees that don't really get any sun? So you can actually, these tiny homes that are trying to live off grid are having a battery systems that are being built inside of the tiny home so they can reuse that power they maybe harnessed either through the sun or actually that they might actually just plug them up to a grid thing. You might live off grid, but you use the grid to give yourself a little bit of power. Then you can go live anywhere maybe that you wanted to live off the grid. For something. So there are battery pack systems that are being installed in these places to harness that power and be utilized later. Also, these tiny homes, when you're not actually living on the grid, you might actually need water and sewer as well to take care of items. But some of the tiny homes are being equipped with incinerator toilets that they actually just burn off the waste. I can't imagine what that might smell like. I'm sure that they probably have ways to make it smell better. But that is one of the things that while we were doing this research that they have incinerator toilets. Therefore, you know, when you're using less water like that, then, you know, you're already saving the amount of water that you would really need because a toilet takes a lot of water usually through the flushing of it. And then also, the water that they can have, that a lot of times it's being collected, usually from the roof that you're having. You might have a barrel or something, you might collect some of the rainwater too, but you can actually collect some of that water and then it's purified to make it potable so you can actually drink it and use it for any cooking purposes that you might have. So there are ways that you can actually live off the grid, and some of these tiny home professional builders, they are so skilled at coming up with those types of ways to live completely off the grid, things that I didn't even know existed for types of amenities that you can have in your home just so that you didn't actually have to any type of connection to any public utility.
Yeah, that's interesting.
The one of the things with the tiny home movement is, you know, the forecast for growth. You know, we talked about this here that, you know, tiny home industry is growing, even though it's tiny. We talked about the sizes of the homes growing, but actually the industry itself is really growing. People are more going towards tiny homes. So in 2017, because it's really hard to get numbers to get the closest to our timeline right now, because we're in here in 2022, that you have to have all these studies and reports that are done. So 5 years ago, they said that there was a 67% increase in the tiny home sales from 2016. So that is a huge increase. I mean, I couldn't imagine seeing that just in any other industry. If I was in the tiny home industry building them, I would love to see that number saying that I have a lot of growth ahead of me. And one of the things too is that people are liking these tiny homes is because 68% of the people that own a tiny home, it's actually mortgage free. So they don't have to pay any mortgage. So that's one of the things that's drawing everyone to this tiny home industry as well. And that is one of the reasons why the growth is so high. I mean, you have, you know, if you did it yourself, it's estimated at $23,000. A lot of times you might be able to just, you know, put down on a credit card or something, or you might have that in savings already, just to already have a home that you own and that you live in.
Yeah, one of your biggest expenses taken care of. That's huge.
Yeah, so, and then, you know, it's estimated the tiny home housing market could increase. Now, this was from 2020, but still could increase by $5.8 billion in 2024. So 2 years from now, that we're seeing a four-year growth of almost $6 billion. That is a huge industry that is growing, that even though it's tiny, it's growing.
That's a good theme for this episode. No, I love it. I love the idea of the tiny homes. I like the minimalistic approach to them. And it can't beat that low cost of housing, you know? So it's very tempting, but at the same time, I don't know that I could do it myself. Mm-hmm. So how about you? Do you think, say, on your own, after the girls move out?
Yeah, you know, I joke around with the girls all the time that I said I would just live in like a Sprinter van and I would just travel and visit them all the different places that they have just with my dog, and then that's all we would do. But, you know, I don't know. I've joked with them on that one, but they didn't want to see their crazy dad showing up at their home or at their college in a van. Where's your dad live? In that van.
See the van over there? One that's been sitting there all week. Yeah, that's it. All right, well, that's some good stuff. I enjoyed this episode. There's a lot of good information on this. So, as our weird news story always relates to the topic, this is a good one. So, the headline on this sounds a little odd, but the thieves steal tiny home that a woman spent 2 years and $20,000 on. So, there you got that $20,000 number that she built herself. She wasn't completely finished, but it's probably lining up with those numbers that you gave. So yes, this woman spent around $20,000 in about 2 years building the home. The home is 12 foot tall, and the exterior was recently completed, and the woman was hoping to finish the interior of it and move into it soon. Well, she was at a remodeling store, and this home was sitting in the parking lot on a trailer. She comes out of the store, and it's stolen. It's gone. That was the end of that article, but I did do some follow-up, and the police did find this tiny home. It was found 30 miles away, and it was like pushed back in a wooded area. What makes this one weird is what the police investigator said. They said, "This is the first time we have investigated the theft of a home." That's pretty funny.
I guess that kind of goes into, you know, whether or not you can have a home on foundations or on wheels.
Right.
If it's on wheels, yeah, you have the chance of your home being stolen, I guess.
Yeah, it's a good point.
Probably not highly likely, but as you said in your story there, that there is a chance it could get stolen.
Yes.
If it's on a foundation, I guess less likelihood.
Probably so.
I would have to say in that town, that probably was the first time they ever had a theft of a home ever investigated.
Right. Yeah.
So, you know, usually after you do that, we always talk about our next episode. You know, our next episode, we're going to cover a rental licensing topic. We're going to kind of leave you on the limbo on that one. We're not going to get into the details on that of what we're going to actually cover. But we always cover in April our rental licensing program that we have here in Hagerstown and talk about things that are actually all across the country and around the world related to rental licensing. And we do this in April because in May is when all the renewals kind of go out for this, for our jurisdiction. And just kind of remind everyone that that's kind of coming up. So we are going to cover a topic here, but we're going to leave you guessing on that one. So you tune in next time so you can hear what we're going to discuss.
Nice. Well, while you're waiting for the next episode to come out, be sure to give our older episodes a listen. All of our episodes are pretty timeless. You know, they will relate for years to come. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and all major podcast platforms. If you want to watch us, you can find us on YouTube by searching for the Hubbub Podcast. And if you like what you hear, or if you have suggestions for us, go over to Apple Podcasts, give us a rating, and leave a comment there if you want to hear anything in particular. That'd be really cool. So, as we always do, we have our musical guest to take out our episode. This one's a big one. So, our featured artist this month, he's a singer, musician, and songwriter. His name is Shane Gamble. So, Shane, he's a Maryland native. He has a passion for the guitar and singing songs that captures the wonderful feeling of living in our great country. Shane has opened for various top country artists such as the Eli Young Band, Lee Bryce, and Granger Smith, and he's had his single Beautiful Work hit the top 40 on the Billboard charts. Shane has shows coming up at the pub St. Paddy's Day party in Ashburn, Virginia on March 17th. And the 1623 Brewing Company in Eldersburg, Maryland on March 18th. And he does make appearances closer to us in Hagerstown, like in Frederick and Roarsville once in a while. And you can check out his music at his website, shanegamble.com. He's also on Spotify, he's on Apple Music and YouTube. And you can catch him on his social media platforms such as Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. I'll link all of those into the podcast description so that you can find it. So, as we take out episode 33, let's give Shane Gamble a listen. Thank you for listening. There ain't no perfect blueprint. We keep on building it on faith. But love is worth every heartache, so hold on tight. On her love, 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 this beautiful world.